idea was excellent, but your slides came from Las Vegas, and I needed to distribute them to your reactors.
Okay. Got it working. Yeah.
Hey, like that.
There you go.
That'll make it much easier to get through it a lot of time. Can the other speakers do the same thing? Or is it just my presentation?
You know, it all depends on what you want to do. It's your wireless.
This next hour and a half really belongs to Dr. Cooper, and we'll have some verbal reactions.
Sure. So they don't have any slides yet?
I don't know, but I doubt it. But what I'm worried about are the next ones coming into the room after we leave.
Oh, just pull it out and that's all there is to it?
No. I assumed when I saw you at first that you were having trouble with it.
It's the way they had it set up. No, it was just the keyboard. It's running fine. It's running fine.
Just the way I like it. So. And I can speak a lot faster and get the presentation easily. It's about 40 minutes, and that's what I'm supposed to speak. Okay. And the other people, do not have slides, you say?
No, let's see.
Thank you for solving that problem for me.
Yes, thank you very much.
In this small room, I won't need to use the microphone.
You know, it's always wise to get early. So
yeah, I know.
Even if you do live over there.
I came by taxi yesterday, but it's just a snap to drive over.
And what?
No problem at all. So I drove over this morning. We rented a car.
Really?
Yeah.
With a lot of traffic?
No, coming this way. Practically none. Going over towards the air base is just a high step. It's great to have a good audio vision, man. Hey, so many times people, I don't know more you know about this. Thanks.
I want to know when you had your slides, so it's a fairly big folder. And so I tried to send them to them. Well, first of all, what happened was it says file something, the name of the file that Cynthia sent it. I deleted it because, you know, you've got viruses, and they always start with something strange like that. So then she had to resend it. Bless her heart. And then I went to Kinko's. $15 later, it's still not transferring. It's too big a file to transfer to the any you can get
a little bit.
So and then finally the slowness last time, because you can only download them within 3 days.
Yeah.
So it was something else.
I brought home a computer in case it was real bad.
Well, it turned out very well because she was so cooperative and great.
So she knows the system. I speak about 2 or 3 times every week. I told you I turned down the trip from Beijing.
No. Thank you.
It was
Mark
of the China. Anybody was a clue, so my wife took some of the money anyway. So I let my mother stand.
Well, that makes me feel guilty, though. I mean, don't tell me that, do they? I don't know. The attendance this year has been very slim. I don't know if it's the economic.
Maybe for the whole week, just 15,000. 35,000.
And some of the sessions don't have, like, what we used to.
Depends
on what else is going on.
Yeah.
I was trying to find up a doctor over at the Expo Center. Somebody said they had one over there, so I'm going to.
So I'm going to speak to those of you as well. Make sure for her. If other speakers have slides, can I just pull this out?
Yeah, just escape out of that, and it's very easy. I can show you how to do that. That's pretty easy.
But when you pull your thumb drives out, is there not a little symbol on the bottom that you're supposed to click so that you can preserve all the information on that thumb drive? Is that correct? Yes and no?
I'm not sure if I understand what you mean.
Well, before you take your thumb, after you've done your presentation.
Yeah, and you've done some adjustments to your presentation?
No. I want to take out his thumb drive, is there not, I've been told, there's a symbol at the bottom of the last slide, not necessarily his, but on the computer, and you're supposed to click on that?
Oh, I'm unaware of that.
So you could just freely take out your thumb drive.
I've been doing that.
With
no. Mac doesn't like you to do that. Macs like you to take it over and take it to the trash, to eject it. But PCs, I've been.
You know, that's really good to know because I was in Utah doing some NIH grant reviews. And they had to click, every time. We took out the thumb drive.
Does that go any higher?
Shift.
half the rooms and try to sit in the back because it's just been so cold. Oh. I debated about even bringing a coat this morning. I have a warm jacket on, so I was feeling it was really warm.
You said you're warm, yeah.
Well, dummy me thought, well, San Diego is warm. I wonder what it's like outside. I've been in this hotel at meetings.
Oh, yeah, I stay elsewhere because I can't afford these places. So I stay at Comfort Inn up in Old Town and rent a car, and it's still cheaper.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
And then you have to pay parking here, though, don't you?
$8. I pay $89 a night for my room. I got a car for 4 days for $70. And this. See, I do the math, but it's still cheaper.
Well, you know how I do it. Because we have meetings, you know, at 6:30 and everything.
Right.
Three of us stay together,
yeah,
and split the cost. If you can find, and you're compatible and you don't have to cling to each other, then you can do it, you know.
Yeah, no, I'm the only one that comes from my organization, so.
Where are you from?
From Oregon.
Where?
Up the road, Portland.
But what organization?
I teach at a community college.
Clackamas?
Chemeketa.
Chemeketa?
Yeah.
I used to work there.
Really?
I taught at Oregon State.
Okay.
I was getting my doctorate. And one of my
just
was
the
speech
image,
at.
Right.
So I did some speech therapy internship there.
Strong.
But I knew some of the kids because I was a cannery near Southern Nathic in Alaska,
okay,
and in Arizona with the Navajos and Hopis. So, you know, it's so easy for me to talk to them.
Well, it seems to be working fine.
The
right. Okay.
Oh, how neat. It's a world, isn't it?
It is.
How long have you been there?
30 years. That's my 30th year.
What do you teach?
Nursing.
Okay, I'll resume and then we'll.
I was thinking,
that
is the Indian school.
Mm-hmm. That's Chamawa.
That's the
Chamawa
first one?
Indian school. No, I teach at the Community College, which is
okay.
Like 2 miles down the road.
So, here you go.
When you said that, I thought, well,
appreciate it.
There was no.
Notice through the bottom there.
Right.
Did you?
And I was on the advisory committee at Benton County.
Sure. Yeah, but Oregon State, you would have been.
Yeah.
Great.
Okay. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. So where are you now?
I'm in Cookeville, Tennessee. I'm worried about it trying to sell my house.
You know, I tried to.
Not this year.
The lights a little bit. Yeah. Yeah.
Work.
Reno
is that
better
the one for these?
I don't think Reno's better than some parts of the world, but.
Oh, well, no.
That's sad. Yeah, you know, there's a panel back here.
Yeah.
Well, they went for
it. I might have to call about
yeah.
this because I tried to turn that down and it seemed to be.
Yeah,
I know. I tried that. Yeah, I'm gonna have to make a call
in
somebody here.
Don't
seem to have
we're
any control.
We're
already
civil friend Reno.
Actually,
okay.
Sparks.
Oh yeah,
Pyramid.
You got
my husband and I used to go see him at the hall of fame.
We're talking here.
So yeah.
So you're really in expect you to.
Not that planned.
Perfect.
Well, then, yeah.
So you have a presentation then? Or just responding?
Just responding, yeah. I just coordinated it out. This is only my second year on the job. For this, and then Wednesday morning, I had to call back.
Oh, what faces wrong that work?
Yeah, well, I'm part of the, having a new physical activity psychologist group. There's some on that panel, and that approval process is going through, so it's more meet and greet and then fly back. So,
meet and greet and talk.
Yeah.
That's fine.
Yeah, that's easy to do. Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, the panel's in there. This one's a doesn't work at all. So I don't know why.
Okay, thank you. What are you doing?
Well, I have a joint appointment. Basically, I teach exercise physiology and statistics, but I also have a joint appointment in with a new bioregional planning master's degree. So it's a master's degree for planners and civil engineers, and it brought me in to do sort of health and built environment. So there's a really amount of panel with civil engineers, landscape architects, economists, political science, geography, conservation social science, and two planners. And so it's this whole, because Idaho is the third fastest growing state.
Is that right?
And so it's, well, how do you control the sprawl? And I probably know what health part of it, so let's see how that does.
Are you coordinating or
what? I'm Joe. I went to a meeting at, we had a campus in Coeur d'Alene, and I'm in this conference hall, and I'm looking out the conference room all over the lake.
Place.
I hate you people. Yeah. Well, yeah, I thought it was great. Yeah, well, it's kind of bumped up against. I live on Moscow now. I moved from the D.C. suburbs
to Moscow.
To Moscow. I was laughing last night. My old house was on a street, end of the street, so the transit buses went by every morning, traffic, the whole thing. Now I live on 5 acres in the middle of nowhere. My neighbor's a moose, basically. And so here I am in San Diego, and I'm here in the street, and nobody's like, oh, I can't sleep again. I got used to the noise, and now I'm used to the quiet.
How long have you been up there?
I just don't think I'll live here.
Is it?
Yeah.
Skiing nearby or
not? Kind of like in Mullen, I think. Go further to the north, and then north of towards Sandpoint, and more towards Spokane. What's Schweitzer? I think that's north of Kirkland. I don't.
No, it's east. Sorry, I'm from Oregon.
Oh, because I had to drive.
Schweitzer?
Yeah, there's one. I thought it was more towards Spokane.
That's Kellogg, I'm thinking.
Yeah,
Kellogg is
all
of them.
Yeah.
They're all small.
Yeah.
They're really small.
Well, that was one of my. My mold, I quit work on, I did nutrition research for the agriculture department for 8 years. And then I literally got off the job, loaded my car, and I loaded the truck. Next morning, drove across country with my wife, getting kind of punch drunk. And you go along Montana, and then right where a lot of ski resorts are, it's just welcome to Idaho, and it just opens up this huge valley. It's just absolutely beautiful. My wife's from Central Valley, California. Her dad used to take her home to Idaho fishing and whatever else she used to do.
She was to make it. She jumped up to the Lake Washington.
Yeah, it was closer to her mom. Her mom's not doing well. She's kind of mad at me because she's having city withdrawal right now. And so here I am in a city with her. She's in Moscow. Well, she works over Washington State, but it's funny.
That's in Spokane, where she works.
That's in Moscow. WSU's in Poland, which is 7 miles from Moscow. It's actually kind of interesting because they actually share a lot of programs. I have WSU students in classification.
Moscow from the border then of Washington State?
Yeah. You actually kind of see the border from campus. That's it. Well, a famous story was that in the 1800s, North Idaho was just what wanted to be part of Washington. And so the compromise was to give North Idaho the state university so that they would stay in the Well, Lewiston was the state capital, and after they got, I think it was after they got the university, they became the state capital of Boise.
But you're Rosemary.
That would be me. How are you? Is this Carlene that I've been talking to? Thank you. I love your jacket. Can I go back to
you?
I don't know, but I could find a place.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Fit like you, sir.
Well, I try.
And this is
Rosemary Filowski, but our school nurse. So just get out of here, Larry. Yes, I mean,
where are you from?
Originally, I'm from Massachusetts, but I'm at an elementary school here and have been for 23 years.
Same
school, yep.
And does a lot with obese kids.
Does a lot with all kids. There's so many of them.
I asked for a grassroots split firmly granted to new kids in the school system. And she was highly recommended, so we're glad to have her.
Hope I say something smart.
We've been trying to get our finished test in San Diego. I guess the obviously San Diego patients involved in the papers.
Yeah.
Just about your presentation. I did recently in Texas and about a second after I think the state was
important. With adults, you're using with adults? Because we do it with children.
So this is short, this is very important for us. Well, it's mandatory to use some presentation.
Big issue here, we have 10th over obese city in San Diego, in the United States.
I wanted to go to San Diego,
because this is what, that's what they, 10th.
And then the door,
whatever. was every time so. The parents cast the kids ever take
it. Oh, yeah, she will.
But, you know, it's all about that. No more, well, what do we have to do with all this stuff? It's all this
I'm just going to briefly, I'm not going to, I'll mention your name when I go down to respond to it, but when you told us, we're just going to see your name and say I'm in this, whatever. And just all kind of, maybe even a little bit about your background. I'll pick up on that. I just expect you to.
Hey, Tony, how you doing?
Good, how are you?
Were you out there jogging this morning?
No, you know my story. I was staying out at South Pearl Beach State Beach. I'm getting up at 4, 5 a.m. to beat the traffic in. I've been here 2 hours.
Oh, jeez.
I want you to introduce me.
Hi, Dave Paul.
Hi, Dave. Larry Olson. Hi. It's a pleasure. Pleasure.
I want you to introduce me to your guy.
Oh, to Dan? He's not here yet.
I know. So. I want to give him... He was a sweetheart.
Yeah, he's a hardworking guy.
And he's one who got somehow got. Are you with a caucus here or a section?
I'm with the. Well, they're having a new special interest group for physical activity.
Oh, good.
I'm on that panel.
Okay, that's. You know, he's the one who helped me get.
Yeah. Are you? Are you going to the American School Health Association meeting in Tampa next month?
No.
That's too bad because we really need some people to help infuse our physical activity stuff, our physical activity council, the ASHA.
Well, that's my background's more in adults. I did clinical nutrition research for 8 years, and I do a lot of accelerometer work.
Oh yeah,
but in adults, but not kids. We're moving that way in Idaho.
You know, the thing is, it's the kids. The adults, you're not going to really change them that much. You got to infuse this stuff in kids.
That's the problem we had is when we work for the agriculture department, you have different sites have different missions. You know,
there's
some
no question.
Are aging and some are whatever. I think Baylor's the kids. Ours was studying healthy adults.
Yeah.
You know, if you had high cholesterol, if you were sick, you can't be a study subject because you would never pass the
right.
Screenings.
Yeah.
So high cholesterol smokers are about the worst we got.
You think?
So, anyway. But yeah, I mean, I'm in a college of education. So I had an 8-year postdoc.
Oh, yeah.
I did nothing but clinical work. And now I'm.
So where were you on your postdoc?
Agriculture, USDA.
Oh, USDA, okay. Did you work with Miley Gonzalez when he was there? He was the undersecretary?
No.
He's a hell of a guy. He's a Penn State grad.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had some people. I did a lot of whole body calorimetry, a lot of double label water, but also did a lot of controlled feeding studies.
Oh, okay.
That kind of stuff. So I got brought into Idaho to kind of generate more of a research agenda. It's just been
years
a
ago,
challenge, to say the least. But.
I was an undergraduate at Lewis and Clark College in Portland, Oregon.
Okay.
And we used to go over to Idaho, over to Moscow and play in Nampa, play baseball at the rodeo grounds and stuff. That was the baseball field then. But our basketball coach, a guy by the name of Jim Goddard, went over and became the basketball coach at the University of Idaho.
Okay.
This is many years. I mean, shit, I'm talking 60s. Hell, I've belonged to this organization since 65. So.
Yeah. I usually do FASA.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So this is my first time even coming to this conference.
It's huge.
Yeah, I mean it's a different issue. I mean, I think I've gotten more involved in the school health. I'm really interested in built environment issues.
Oh, okay.
Sure. I'm on a bioregional planning master's degree program.
Oh, okay.
And so they brought me in to do it's for landscape architects, planners, civil engineers, and they brought me in to do sort of a health perspective. Built environment.
So what section did you join here?
The physical activity.
Oh, the caucus.
Yeah.
But that's a caucus as opposed to a section.
Well, it's a new, they're just going through the approval process right now.
Oh, okay.
So there's actually, we've got our 100 members, we've got the paperwork.
Yeah, because I've been the chair of the intersectional council here.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah.
So you
recycling back through again, too.
Might be coming back, seeing our application.
Good.
But yeah,
that'd
we had
great.
A little walk jog this morning, and we had about 50 people came out.
Oh, that's terrific.
We had a social last night and had a lot of people last night, so
that's great.
A lot of interest in it.
That was originally at 6:30.
Yeah.
How many people came out? About 50, you said.
That's what Steve Hooker said, yeah.
Were you there?
Yeah, I was at the end point. I'm at the Holiday Inn, so all I had was time to jog out, see the end of it, and then jog back to my hotel.
What was your route?
Just along the harbor. So I just got on Google Earth and tried to draw a map of somewhere around here to somewhere around 5K, and it was the Maritime Museum.
Oh, sure.
Just about the turnaround point. Probably should have made it a little bit longer, but...
Well, and make it too much longer than a lot of people...
What is your altitude?
Moscow itself is about 26. My house is about 35, and then the top of Moscow Mountain is a little over 5, I think. So basically, Moscow bumps up against the mountain range that separates Idaho from Montana. So if you go east, you can't go east. You have to go down to Lolo Pass, down through to Missoula, or north and around. You can't go through, which is why I have moose camping in my yard all winter.
Oh jeez!
And I have bears beating up my compost. And
here at the University of Alaska, their booth here, you go by there and say, here, have a moose pad. And it's a mouse pad, but there's a picture of a moose and stuff on it. It's really pretty neat. It's really cute.
I know.
Yeah, and the over in the convention center at the expo, just go by there and they give you a moose pad.
Yeah, I started playing ice hockey again after 20 years of not doing
Lord.
It. And my teammates are 19-year-old Alaskans.
Oh, jeez.
So you, Alaskans.
What was that?
Yeah, so I'm double the age of most of my teammates.
Oh, jeez.
And so you see the camo crowd shows up for the games. You know, the Alaskans are there to watch. So
What was that? There was a movie about some little town up in Alaska. They had a town hockey team or something, and then they got somebody. I can't remember.
They played the Rangers.
Yeah, they played the Rangers. They got the Rangers up there. Yeah. That's a pretty good little movie. That's actually based on a true story.
Yeah, I didn't see that.
They actually beat the Rangers. Yeah.
Well, your Dallas Stars are doing pretty well this so far, I think, this year. So. Not a big hockey fan.
Because the Rangers done so badly.
Oh, yeah. And then Indianapolis lost last night.
They lost last night.
Oh, yeah, 21-31.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Manning's had a bad year.
Yeah, he's not getting protected very much and stuff. A lot of the quarterbacks are going down.
Seven touchdowns and seven interceptions.
Oh, jeez. Yeah.
I don't know where you graduated. We got a good team this year. Where's Oklahoma?
Oh, wow.
Sam Bradford. He's up there.
That kid from Texas or something else. That kid from Texas.
Yeah. I'm a Buckeye, so it's dark days and... Buckeye Land.
Well, I retired from Penn State, so what can I say?
Oh,
you got that right.
What was Paterno 0-7 against Ohio State? So.
He's 82. Yeah. He got his hit perked on a practice. Somebody crashed in the practice or something like that. So that's why
he's
in the press box. I'll tell you, that's going to be a dogfight. Those top three teams are, Alabama, Texas, and Penn State.
Well, hopefully it won't make the Big Ten look too bad, I guess.
You know, the thing that's crazy is a lot of the sportscasters and stuff say, well, the best team in the nation is probably USC.
They lost.
They lost. Oregon State, yeah. See, I'm originally from Oregon. I've got some nieces who went to Oregon State, and I got some other ones who went to Oregon. Of course, Oregon got crushed because they lost three quarterbacks.
Oh, yeah.
So that Brooks kid. Yeah, they're doing well. That's going to be a good game next. Texas Tech playing Saturday.
Oh, yeah.
Texas is rolling. That McCoy kid. Is he?
Well, that's the big thing is, you know, where I'm, you know, when you live in Ohio, football is huge, and so is Texas. I lived in El Paso for a year, but, you know, you come to other places like Idaho, it's like football.
Yeah.
I think hunting and fishing is more of the...
There you go. Well, hell, in Pennsylvania, first day of deer season, schools are all released. There's nobody going to be there.
Is that right?
Yeah. They excuse for what, so they just take a professional day or something so everybody can go hunting on the first day of deer season. There's more deer killed on the road in Pennsylvania in a given year than there's been harvested through hunting. Oh, God, they just, I mean, it's just, there are some highways. The highway between, what is that, I guess it's 80 that goes across and the one that goes up to Erie. That stretch of about, oh my Jesus, they're just all the time, just yeah. Bam, bam, bam. It's just like
in Western Maryland. Was
oh,
bad
oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, I drove through there at night one night, and after I about seeing a roadkill every quarter mile, I just pulled over and got a hotel room. I said,
that's
uh-uh,
right. Yeah,
I'm
crazy.
Not driving through this. So, but yeah, I had a moose living in my yard all winter. And call him Vern. He just kind of hung around. I
call him Vern. That's my brother's name.
Just call him Vern. You know, he's made it up. And so we got our fingers crossed that Vern's going to make it through hunting season.
There you go.
Well, moose tags were about two. Yeah, he's a big old male. We're mad because he tore up all our shrubs, and we thought he could at least leave his sheds behind, but he, I don't know, didn't leave them. But they're supposed to be. But I grew up on a farm.
Oh yeah.
And he's a big slow cow.
Yeah.
But like one morning I came out, walked out my garage, looked over, my trash cans were knocked over, and he was about from here to that mirror away, and I said, Vern, you idiot, look what you did to my trash can. And I looked over and he just kind of walks off. He just kind of walks off real slow. I mean, one night I was shoveling my driveway and he was right there. So I thought, well, as long as there's enough difference between me and him, I can run, you know. But they just, this time of year, you're supposed to be really afraid of them. You're supposed to stay away from the cows.
Well, they're running.
Yeah, the cows and if they're with a calf, run. Well, I've had those in my place, and I go the other way when I see a cow. But the bulls, I've had two or three of them just kind of hanging out. They eat my trees and they eat my shrubs. But no.
When I was in elementary school up in Oregon, our principal, Otto Peterson, he used to go to Alaska every year, and he'd get a moose. And they bring it back, and that's what we had for our school lunch. We had moose burger. They barbecue it and all kinds of stuff.
That actually sounds pretty good.
Yeah.
I
really enjoyed looking through the slides and everything, Karen. It's just terrific. Thank you very much.
Here's a heart.
Let me go out front instead of sitting here if we can't see. We had the group of center, you know, did all those because I got the ball out of
we have 2 minutes and then we'll get started. Oh, yes.
I'm going to go out in front so I can see this one.
Let's get started. My name is Colleen Hughes, and I'm with Public Health Nursing Section and Nursing and School Health, thanks to Dan. Have jointly sponsored this session, and we hope that you get a great deal of information from it. We're really, really pleased together to put together this session. How do you like that? Together, together. Anyway, I would like to tell you who our guest speaker is. It's Dr. Kenneth Cooper. Probably those of you in the room probably know far more about him than what this introduction will be. However, his wonderful secretary, Cynthia, gave me the information.
When Dr. Kenneth Cooper published his first bestseller, Aerobics, in 1968, he introduced a new word and a new concept. This year marks the 40th anniversary of the revolutionary book that launched a worldwide fitness revolution. Today, Dr. Cooper, the recognized father of aerobics and leader of international physical fitness movement, is credited with motivating more people to exercise in the pursuit of good health than any other person. So you can see why we're really pleased to have him speak to us this morning. During his military service, Dr. Cooper created conditioning programs for NASA and developed 12-minute and 1.5-mile fitness tests and the aerobics point system. Wanting to pursue full-time the exploration of the relationship between cardiovascular fitness and health and longevity, Dr. Cooper opened the Cooper Aerobic Center in Dallas in 1970. Nearly four decades later, it serves as a headquarters for 10 health companies and a nonprofit research and education institute. Dr. Cooper expanded his vision by opening Cooper Aerobic Center at the Craig Ranch in McKinley. He has lectured in more than 50 countries and actually just this morning told us he gave up a trip to China to be here with us, so we thank him. But I think we should thank his wife because she really didn't want to go either. So. He has authored 19 books and the last one was with his son, Dr. Tyler Cooper. Dr. Cooper's mark has been felt on the American diet by working with a leading soft drink company, can't say the name, conflict of interest, and eliminating trans fat from a popular snack item that we all eat. His recent work focused on the health and fitness of America's youth and fighting childhood obesity problem. And then after Dr. Cooper speaks and gives us all this wealth of information, we'll have three people who will react to his comments. And they are the best of the best also, because we have an excellent speaker, so we need the best people. So we have Dr. Paul from Idaho. We have Rosemary Jaworski, our school health nurse right here from San Diego, and Dr. Larry Olson. That I will have each of them, when they come up to do their remarks, tell us a little bit about their background. Now, it's my pleasure. Help us. So welcome Dr. Kenneth Cooper.
Well, thank you very much. Pleasure to be here this morning. And first of all, I have no personal professional interest in any of the products that's to be discussed in this presentation. I give about 100 presentations a year. I think it's the first time I ever had to do that. I'm going to be talking about changing lives for the better, primarily the kids this morning. Let's go back, though, for a few minutes back to 1966.
They are recording, so you're going to have to do it, unfortunately. Sorry, sir.
This way. I'm not accustomed to speaking this way. Go back to 1966. I was preparing the manuscript of that first book, Aerobics. Got to that chapter dealing with endurance exercises, walking, running, cycling, and swimming. And back in those days, the word isometrics was a popular word. Probably remember that Charles Atlas Dynamic Tension. So I took the adjective aerobic I knew from my medical school days, add an S to it, meaning living in air, living in oxygen, and titled the manuscript, a copy of that chapter of the manuscript, Aerobics. I sent off the publisher. He thought that's unique. Let's call the book Aerobics. I disagree. People can't pronounce it. They can't spell it. They won't remember it. Look what's happened the past 40 years since that book was published. But one prediction I did make that was correct, and that if the book is successful and it's translated into foreign languages, we're now in some 41 languages around the world, they'll have difficulty translation. Well, that prediction came true. For example, in Germany, it came out as Bewegungstraining, which means motion training. They got to my fifth book, The Aerobics Program for Total Well-Being, and that translation came out of Dr. Cooper's Gesundheit Program. We noticed in Russia they called Aerobica, And the new aerobics was translated Nova Aerobica. In Brazil, they speak Portuguese. They couldn't translate aerobics into Portuguese. So now if you go to Brazil, they don't ask you to have done your running, your jogging, the aerobics. They ask you to have done your Cooper today. Because in South America, Cooper and jogging are synonymous terms. I think the French took the cake. When they tried to translate the word in their language, it came out as oxygen a la carte. All different ways that word has been translated. But if you want to know the official definition of aerobics, go to the Oxford English Dictionary. It was published in 1986. Is as follows. It's a method of physical exercise for producing beneficial changes in the respiratory and circulatory systems of activities which require only a modest increase in oxygen intake and so can be maintained. Why know that definition so well? Because that's the definition I get to put in 1985. Yes, the book came out overnight, a bestseller. Published in three different forms, hardback, softback, and it was a tear-off cover in Reader's Digest back in 1968. And people started jogging all over the world. There was great concern among my medical colleagues back in those days because when I was in medical school back in the 50s, we were taught over 40 years of age, you can't exercise vigorously, you'll have a heart attack. Some of you are old enough to remember those days, but when a person had a heart attack, they stayed flat on their back in bed for 6 weeks. We give them instructions once they left the hospital to move from a two-story to a one-story house. It's no longer safe to walk up and down a flight of stairs. And I remember giving the men instructions, be sure to let the wife carry the garbage out and the groceries in, because women have fewer heart attacks than men. Used to be true, but now more women die of heart attacks than men do in this country. They just die later in life. So it was great concern. I would see titles in medical newspaper articles that said the streets going to be full of dead joggers as more Americans follow Cooper. I began to wonder what was going to happen. Well, by 1968, we had only 24% of our population exercising, and we had an estimated 100,000 joggers. Overnight, tremendous increase. 59% by 1984, 34 million joggers by 1984. Well, as predicted by the critics, was there an increase in deaths from heart attacks? To answer that question, let me quote from the famous medical journal, the Wall Street Journal, January the 3rd, 1984, and I quote verbatim, deaths from coronary heart disease began rising sharply in the 40s and reached a peak in 1968, like the word they selected, and then mysteriously began dropping. Heart disease didn't go up, it went down, as more Americans embraced the concept of exercise and jogging. So by 1990, we still had 30 million people jogging. During that 22-year period, we had a 48% decrease in deaths from coronary heart disease. It went down, not up. During that 22-year period, we had an unprecedented increase in our longevity. We increased the lifespan by 6 years during that 22-year period. It should have been only 2 years. So a few people actually changed their lifestyle and did that. When I was speaking back in 1990 behind the old Iron Curtain, I spoke in Russia at 31% increase. I spoke in Poland from 1968 to 1990 in Poland, 36% increase. And then in Hungary, 40% increase. And the record was Romania with a 60% increase. Sure, they said, all right, Cooper, it's because you're modern technology. We don't have balloon angioplasty, bypass surgery, coronary cares in our hospitals. We don't have those expensive medications. I said, hold the phone. Because what happened, that cardiovascular decrease in deaths by 48% was because 76 million baby boomers changed their lifestyle. Those born between 1946 and 1964 led a revolution at that time we haven't seen since, or we haven't seen before that. Because you see, they quit smoking in great numbers, went 46% down to 29%, 24.9%. We started to gain better control of blood pressure, identifying hypertension and then treating high blood pressure. Cholesterol. Middle-aged American male dropped his cholesterol from 234 down to 204 during that period of time. People don't remember that. Stress management. The harmful effects of stress and how to control it. More people exercising. Look at those in reverse. What's the best way to control stress physiologically, as I've done for 45 years? Exercise at the end of the day, prior to the evening meal, burn up the stress of the day so I can sleep at night. I'm 77 years of age, still work 50 and 60 hours a week. I practice what I preach, and I think that's one reason I'm still here today. All right, what about a cholesterol? What's the best way to increase the protective type of cholesterol physiologically? That's the HDL cholesterol. The answer is exercise. It's well documented, both men and women, if you want to increase the HDL cholesterol. What's the best way to protect you from developing high blood pressure, even treat high blood pressure? And the answer is aerobic exercise. If you want to break the cigarette smoking habit permanently, start an exercise program. Yes. It is not so much we die, we kill ourselves. The philosopher Peggy once said, when a man dies, he dies not so much the disease he has, he dies of his entire life. All right, back in 1990, we're in pretty good shape. That year we had 400,000 deaths from tobacco. We had 300,000 deaths from diet, exercise, obesity. On down the list, alcohol, infectious diseases, accidents, guns, sexual-related diseases, and drugs. Or as I said, on a roll, 1998 was the threshold, was the break, what happened in this country. Because 10 years later, We had a 35,000 increase here in tobacco. We had a 65,000 increase here in diet, exercise, inactivity, obesity. All these went down. These went up. Projections are by the year 2010 we'll have more deaths from our diet, obesity, and activity than we have from tobacco. I'm afraid we're already there at the present time. We're in the midst of an epidemic of obesity that we're completely ignoring in America today. All right, now, as you know, we determine whether or not there were weight by using the body mass index. Weight in pounds, but by height in inches, times 703. 5 foot 5, 130, 21.7. 5 foot 5, 165, 27.5. All right, the range, less than 25 is normal. 25 to 30 is overweight, above 30 is obese. There's a 2006 data right there. But you can see back in 1990, we had no states more than 14% above 30 on the BMI scale. But by 2006, we have three states that are above 30 on the BMI scale. Only Colorado is left. Along with that enormous epidemic of obesity, we're seeing also an increase in heart disease, as you can see from 1999 to 2003. See where it is located? Look there. It looked there. That's not rocket science. It's the obesity in our country that is doing that, and it's also causing a massive increase in adult onset diabetes because of inactivity and obesity. All right, and back in 2005, look at those same states. Look familiar, doesn't it? Just like we had before with heart disease and with obesity and diabetes. Something else we're seeing in medicine now is a lot more of sleep apnea, the Reggie White syndrome. We had a Dallas Cowboy just passed away the last month, 40 years of age, died in his sleep. He was an overweight gentleman, played in the line, didn't lose weight when he quit playing, and he died in his sleep. Sleep apnea, they said, was the cause of his death. We're seeing more and more of that. But also we're seeing a perfect relationship between levels of fitness, or rather body mass index here, and relative risk of death from cancer. All right, and women is death from cancer of the uterus and the female organs. And men is cancer of the liver. Why? Why is it that way? When people come to our clinic in Dallas, we do a body scan. We scan from the neck down to the groin with a CT scan. It takes about a minute and a half to do that. All right, we look primarily for coronary calcification, early cancer, big thing we look at. But also we're finding more and more fatty infiltration of the liver in overweight people. What does that do? It sets the stage for steatohepatitis, a toxic type of hepatitis from fat. It's not from viruses or from bacteria. That goes on to cirrhosis and goes on to cancer of the liver. What about you women? We know the postmenopausal woman who is overweight, good news and bad news. The good news, she has a higher level of estrogen because the fat acts as a hormone producer, and so that protects her to some extent from osteoporotic fractures. And keep in mind, there'll be twice as many women to die of the complication of osteoporotic fractures of the hip this year than die from breast cancer. We know that. So again, we know, too, that it may protect her from osteoporosis, but increases the risk of female organs. So there is a relationship there, and we're seeing more people like this. Here's a man with a normal skeleton. Here's a 5-foot woman weighing 300 pounds. No wonder she has problems with her hips, her elbows, and her knees. No idea it's a major disaster that we're seeing in this country. But how is obesity determined? Well, it's determined by several ways. In children, now we're talking about the next few minutes, talking about children, using the body mass index and percent body fat. Now, for what we're looking at in this country, if the child is obese in the top 5 percentile, and that's using body mass index, overweight is the top 15 percentile. Keep that in mind. Top 5 percentile being obese, top 15 percentile is overweight and obese. All right, going back to 1963, we had only 4.2% of our children that were obese. Now by the year 2000 though, 6 to 19 years of age, we have almost quadrupled that. All right, we've gone from 4.2 to 15.3. That's the top 5 percentile. If you go to the top 15 percentile, you double that. That means by 2000, we had 30% of our children overweight or obese, 6 to 19 years of age, and it's said by HHS, that by 2010, we'll have 20% of our children and youth in the United States will be obese by 2010. All right, if you look in Texas right now, we already have 19% of our children are obese. The highest in the country is District of Columbia. You see Mississippi, 17.8. And we also know that according to one estimate, insured children treated for obesity are approximately 3 times more expensive for the health system than the average insured child. All right, that's what we're looking at. Cost of health care, can't do anything but go up with that type of a problem. In Texas, they're looking at 4th graders, 8th graders, and 11th graders. This is overweight and obese, top 15 percentile. Look at that, 42%, 39%, 36%. And 70% of these children become obese as adults, is what projection is now. I've heard predictions are by the year 2040, we'll have 95% of Americans will be obese or overweight, where we're going at the present time. And no one's paying attention to this. Not trying to make any changes in this. All right, keep this in mind, too. There's an epidemic of adult-onset diabetes being seen in children. It's estimated among children born in the year 2000, one of three children develop diabetes, higher in Hispanics and Afro-Americans, that's 2 out of 5. Right, what does that mean? That means that if we have 21 million diabetics in America today, and by the year 2050, then, we will have 100 million diabetics if we don't do something. If one out of three children born after the year 2000, by the time they're 50 years of age, we'd be diabetic, that means that we'll have 100 million diabetics by that period of time. Right now, the life expectancy is around 78, almost 79 years. By the year 2050, it'll be 72 years. That's what projections are. Why? If they develop adult onset diabetes before they're 14 years of age, they would shorten the lifespan by 70 and 27 years. As a result, this may be the first generation which parents live longer than their children. That's what we're facing in America today and doing very little about it. In California, since 1999, we've been doing some fitness gram testing versus academic grades that children make in school. All right, now what we use is the Stanford Achievement Test, 9th edition, this is 2004, versus our fitness gram. I want you to understand this now because this is what we're trying to promote around the United States, is fitness gram testing for our children. It's been well documented. We've been doing this since 1982. All right, this is not a test of athletic ability, it's natural athletic ability. The President's Council test is a test primarily of natural athletic ability. You want to reach the top 10 percentile if you're a natural athlete. That's all there is to it. So we try to develop something that measures functional fitness. All right, the first thing we test is aerobic capacity. This is done by a pacer test. It's done by a one-mile run or a walk test. All right, that's the first thing. We don't rely completely upon body mass index. I prefer to have percent body fat measured by skin folds. The reason for that is about 15% of the people with the body mass index scores are wrong. The problem is that they're lean, they're muscular. I'll give you an example. Chad Hennings, Dallas Cowboys, 6'6", 300 pounds. All right, he was 36% on the BMI, 36 on the BMI scale. He's 10% body fat. I'm 14% body fat. He's lighter than I am. So it doesn't work in all cases. That's why I prefer to use the skin folds, getting percent body fat, as a backup body mass index. Number three is abdominal strength with the curl-ups. Number four is the back strength with the trunk lift. Number five is upper body strength, push-ups, pull-ups, flexed arm hang, and number six is a flexibility test. All right, then they end up with a fitness gram card. Now, all you have to do to pass the test, you don't pass the test. We call this being the healthy zone or needs improvement. This is the top 80 percentile. It's all you have to reach. All right, this is a card that the children get. Now, this goes home to the parents. Now, if this is the beginning of the test of the year, end of the year. If they don't show improvement, then we send information home with the parents what that child needs to concentrate on. All right, now, where'd this come from? I'll talk about this later. But we found in our studies that if the people reach the top 80 percentile, there's a dramatic improvement in health. I'll show that in just a minute. So that's where this comes from. You must reach the top 80 percentile to be in the healthy fitness zone. All right, now, it's not that hard. Like an 11-year-old girl, to be in the healthy fitness zone, they have to run a mile between 9 and 12 minutes. They have the pacer test, percent body fat, 13 to 32, curl-ups, 15 to 29, trunk lift, only 9 to 12 inches, push-ups. That's very simple. It shouldn't be that hard to achieve those standards. Now, this is for 11-year-old girl. It's age and sex adjusted. All right, now, we find where fitness gram testing is in the United States at the present time. Heavy here, heavy in the Northeast. We have mandatory testing in New York City. We have mandatory testing law in California, 5th graders, 7th graders, and 9th graders. All right, going back to 2004 and looking in California, CST math score, and look at number of fitness standards that they passed, and these are million kids, 5th grade, 7th graders, and 9th graders, a perfect correlation there between math scores and levels of fitness using fitness gram. That's math scores. Here's English language scores. See the same correlation there. The children who are more physically fit make better grades in school. That's a fact. All right, and you find, too, here is 400,000 fifth graders that they were looking at their scores in English language. They showed the same thing there, unless they ate the National School Lunch Program. Look at the difference there. Is that because they get primarily pizza and chicken strips and french fries for lunch? The majority. I know they have the standards. That happened in Texas, though, because the kids won't eat it. They get what they want. Or is that because of the environment that they live in, a combination of both? All right, in 2006 in California, they tested 1.3 million students, 5th, 7th, and 9th graders, and they're so overwhelmed, only 25% of the students can pass all six fitness gram tests, and 40% could not run or walk the mile out of time, so they allowed $40 million PE teachers and $500 million for fitness supplies and physical education teachers training. That's the good news. The bad news, it was never funded. You probably know that. They passed the law, but they're never funded because of the deficit situation that you're in California. So we haven't changed in California at all as far as the programs are concerned. All right, now looking at Austin, Texas, trying to find out why that some of these kids don't fare as well at the Ethan School Lunch Program. They're testing 5th and 7th graders, 8,000 reading and math. We saw the same thing, unless they were black or Hispanic. And you see here, black and Hispanic worth is white and Asian primarily. You see that, and that's the reading scores, and that's the math scores. You see the same thing. So ethnicity is a factor here, too. It's not just a school lunch program that they're involved in. All right, now showing you an ideal school, the school I've worked with in Dallas for the last 5 years. It's called Episcopal School of Dallas. And looking at 38th grade students, 224 students, and we found that they had 92.5% to score way high on the physical test, but passed 5 physical, and look at the academically. And that was reading and math. So if you have a high, if you have a good conditioning program in the school, you get this block effect. You had none in 0, 1, and 2. You started 3 through 6 when you had that block effect, and they had 92.5% to pass at least 5 of the tests, 65.5% to pass at least 6 tests. Boy, I don't know what happened there. Oh, boy. Something happened. I'll show you just a minute why they did so well, too, on that. It's because they have a good PE program that begins when the kids are in 3 years of age. We worked this out ahead of time, but it's not functioning right. Sorry about this. I didn't do anything different, just did it automatically. This is a regular computer, I could have taken care of that immediately. Okay, I wanted to show you, here we are. Look at the program. Starting at age 3. 25 minutes twice a week, 1 to 4, 3 minutes 5 times a week. Grades 5 and 6, 4 minutes 5 times a week. 45 minutes 5 times a week, all the way through high school in a program. We don't have programs like that anymore. Why is the child physically fit and make better grades in school? Does something happen in that child that makes them make better grades? Don't know for sure. This was published a couple years ago in which they looked at the Prader-Willi syndrome. These are students that are genetically deficient. They're morbidly obese by the time they're 5 or 6 years of age. They looked at adults and children, and they found their IQs as adults and children. They were the oldest was 30 in this group. Average age was 10, was 63, the moron level. So they thought that was strictly genetic, or was it because of obesity? So they looked at these siblings. The only thing wrong here was that these children were 150% above ideal weight before they're age 6. No genetic deficiency. But as children and adults, they had IQs slightly above the moron level. And what the theory was, here's their siblings that were normal weight before they're 5 or 6 years of age. If that is that child who is obese and active before they're 6 years of age, their brains never develop. That's one of the theories. And discovered a link between marked obesity and toddlers' and IQ scores, cognitive delays in brain, leisure symptoms seen in Alzheimer's disease patients. 5, 6, 7 years of age, we're seeing patients, seeing children with brains like Alzheimer's. An excellent book was published in January this year by Dr. Reddy from Harvard, entitled Spark. Look what he said. Emerging research showing that physical activity sparks biological changes that encourage brain cells to bind to one another. For the brain to learn, these connections must be made. Exercise provides an unparalleled stimulus, creating an environment in which the brain is ready, willing, and able to learn. Exercise is fertilizer for the brain. He says, immediately after exercise, vigorous exercise, the areas of the brain most profuse of blood and oxygen are those responsible for creativity and memory. In his book, he points out that kids always make better grades after recess than after lunch. Keep that in mind. Can you change this? We did it 1 year up in Kansas City. 500 students, 4th and 5th grade students. Fitness gram testing, the fall 2005, spring of 2006. Everything we tested dramatically increased, including aerobic capacity that went from 45 minutes 1 day a week to 45 minutes 5 days a week. That's all they did. That's all we did was change the number of days they worked exercise per week. Aerobic capacity increased 207%, and their strength increased 433%. It's not difficult to do that. Just get PE back into schools, and you'd be surprised. Question?
What's the change you made again?
Pardon me?
The difference. What was the difference?
45 minutes 1 day a week versus 45 minutes PE 5 days a week. That's all they did. Look at this, though. this is what impressed the teachers, is disciplines involving violence, out of school suspension days, look what happened. The principal said this, students are more motivated throughout the day, enthusiasm is way up, and discipline issues are way down. Why? Kids don't get in trouble as much, get involved in a good PE program, according to this study. Right, in California, you can't just test. You have to test and follow up. Look what they've done in California since 1999. They've been testing every year, a million kids, fifth graders, seventh graders, and ninth graders, but they haven't improved. You have to test and follow through with some type of mandatory program. That's when we tried to change this. Because of my relationship with President George Bush, I've done his examination for the last 19 years. He was one of my members of our club before he became governor of Texas. I know him very well. So I've gone to Washington the last 7 years, six times, the Bethesda Naval Hospital to do his exam, and last year at Camp David. I'll be doing his exam again within the next few weeks for his final exam. Because of that, in 2006, when Carmona retired, the 31st of July, I was up doing his examination on the 4th of August. He said, Ken, I want you to be my Surgeon General. He'd asked me to be that back in 2001. I couldn't do it then without selling my center to the highest bidder. It was ridiculous what they want you to do, to go to Washington. I wasn't going to do that, but now my son's on board. So I said, George, I think I might be able to consider it this time. So I went directly to the top on the 8th of September, HHS Secretary, up to his office. They said, Dr. Cooper, we want you to concentrate on AIDS, avian flu, and bioterrorism. I want to concentrate on childhood obesity and diabetes, adult obesity, and the cost of health care. Great, Dr. Cooper, but you're wasting your time in Washington. Why is that? Because since January 2005, there's been 9 bills submitted by members of Congress trying to do what you want to do. One by Ted Kennedy, 2 by Bill Frist, and 1 by John Cornyn. 8 bombed out in subcommittee, 1 died in the House. You're wasting your time in Washington. Go back to Texas. Slip in the back door. See if you can get it started nationwide. I wanted to test 57 million kids, 3rd to 12th grade, nationwide was my goal. Because I'll tell you, the only way you get a lifestyle change, I found the last 37 years in Dallas, you have to have a 4-step approach. First of all, an evaluation. Find out what the problem is. Number 2 must be an education motivation experience. Number 3, you must give them recommendations how to change their lifestyle. They're safe, effective, and realistic. Implementation program is safe, effective, and realistic. And number 4, a follow-up. Get them back. We've been highly successful in changing people's lives permanently in Texas last almost 40 years by that 4-step approach. That's what I want to do with the kids. I want to get an evaluation first to find out how bad the situation is in America. So I came back, called Rick Perry, said, Doc, let's do it. So I worked with Senator Jane Nelson, and I tell you, it was going through hell and high water trying to get that approved. I had testified 4 times for the legislature in early 2007, trying to get them approved, Senate Bill 530, because you see, Senate Bill 530 made it mandatory grades 1 through 5. We have no PE in Texas at all. It's completely gone for the last 20 years. But we made grades 1 through 5, 30 minutes 5 days a week, 45 minutes 3 times a week, or 25 minutes over a 2-week period, and then grades 6 through 8 the same, and nothing in 9, 11, and 12. So that's what we wanted to get passed. But this is the big thing they fought, was they had to have the fitness gram testing every year, 3rd to 12th grade. Tremendous opportunity there to see what's going to happen. So that's what we had difficulty getting passed. I found out something, though, when I worked legislature, I didn't know what it was. It's called the mandate without funding. You know about that, obviously. Because here I'm a legislator. I've got all these people fighting this bill. We had the superintendents and principals. Because of No Child Left Behind, we have no room in school for it. Have to change the curriculum. We had the music teachers, 10,000 strong. They're lobbyists on my back because they thought they'd lose their jobs. We brought PE back into schools. Art teachers, drama teachers, all against me. Well, over here we had the Medical Association, Diabetes Association, Heart Association. They're all in favor of it. So I'm a legislator. Both sides vote. What do I do to satisfy both sides? I passed a mandate without funding because I tell these people 95% won't be funded. Don't worry about that. I tell these people I did the best I could do. I couldn't get it passed. They left out one thing. That was me. And I said, okay, guys and gals, you'll play that game. I will fund this myself. All right, it's going to require funding for 9,000 schools to train 25,000 teachers to be able to do this test. And by the grace of God, a lot of hard work, we had it funded in a period of only 3.5 months by private funding. From 27th of September until the 1st of January 2008, we funded that project. And boy, look what happened. It was amazing. The results were released the first time I've ever presented this data at a major medical meeting. The first time this ever been done, it was released the 2nd, 1st of July, this on the 2nd of July, the Dallas Morning News front page, because what happened, we tested, largest group ever, 2.5, almost 2.6 million students. They told us, Test Education Agency, anytime you have a mandatory test, unless there's a penalty, they won't do it. You'd be lucky if 30% of people to take the test. Look what we got. We get 83% districts take the test. Because why? Because we trained and motivated 25,000 teachers. That's what did it, a pyramid, a domino effect. We did that. And look what we found, though. This shocked the state wide open. We found in girls, 3rd to the 12th grade, look at the number that could pass all six of those simple tests. Very simple tests. With 32, 27, 23, 22, 20, 18, 13, 11, 10, and 7.8%. Dad, look at the girl. Look at the guys. 27 down, 8.58%. I mean, this is deplorable. We have less than 10% of our seniors graduate from high school can pass a simple fitness test. Major General Granger came down and visited with us not long ago. He's Department of Defense, and he's in charge of health aspects for them. And he said, we get these kids, when they graduate from high school, enlist in the military, and they're so fat, so deconditioned, we've had to lower our standards to meet our quotas. He said, that's a national security problem. Because we have 6 weeks to work with these kids in boot camp, within 3 months they're in Iraq or Afghanistan. It's a national disaster. This we brought to our attention. So again, deplorable thing. What we're looking at now, with the help of Robert Wood Johnson, they're funding us now. They're helping us do this analysis. Looking at levels of fitness versus passing each of six tests, regional comparison, ethnic comparison. I have six states now working with us in this project. Throughout the latest one yesterday was South Carolina. They're working with us on this project. North Carolina. We've got Georgia. We've got Colorado. A lot of these states are working with us. And what we're looking at, too, are all these variables. Now, I found that what I worked at, right, what the principals want right now, surprised me. They want to look, here's attendance rate, free lunch programs, reduced lunch program, grades they make in school, substance abuse, violence, weapons, truancy, obesity, and diabetes. What do you think is the number one that the principals want to know? Relationship between level of fitness and what?
Attendance.
Attendance, you're right. Attendance rate is number one. Number two, what they want to know? Violence. And number three is grades. That's what they're asking us to do. We're in the process of doing that right now. By January next year, we'll have data on 2.6 million kids in those three variables. I think that's going to shock you wide open when you see that, too. All right, now, what about a good program? We've had one for about 10 years out in El Paso. Don Disney set up that program. And look what they do versus the state. Look at 25,000 boys, third graders through the 12th grade, 55 versus 27, 55 versus 20, all the way down. Same problem in high school because there are only programs in high school, 9, 10, 11, and 12. Look at the girls. Only one-third of the statewide, they had three times that many. El Paso could do it. This is not an impossible test. All the way down, 68, 56, 56, 40, all the way down. But again, you find the same thing in the girls. So again, this is a program they have in El Paso, though, I've had for several years. 45 minutes taught by certified PE teachers, daily recess, you see all the grades of 7, all that. But nothing through the 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th. So my goal was to start a fitness and wellness movement in Texas spread across the United States. It's not spreading on just across the United States, it's spreading around the world. As mentioned, I was asked to be in China today to speak to a group on this, presenting this data to them. I've been in China several times, this reason I've been particularly too excited about going. But I've already accepted a presentation on the 1st of December in Munich, Germany. Munich wants to duplicate our studies in Texas and possibly countrywide. Wouldn't it be a shame if Germany beats us to the draw and they test their whole country on something like this, find out what their level of fitness is their kids so they can see some movement in Germany? Be surprised that didn't happen. All sponsored by our national, by our nonprofit research institute. I'm going to go for a few minutes before we close, though, and talk about what we think is necessary for fitness. Over the years, I've been trying to bridge the gap between fatism and scientific legitimacy. Use exercise to practice medicine. That's my whole career. Last 40 years. 19 books. Also, I know that you can't determine fitness by questionnaire. Because questionnaire, people ask you what they do. They give you the answer they think you want. They exaggerate. To remember sometimes outright lie. The correlation with what people say they do and the way they perform physically is 0.3. No correlation at all. That's all it is. So we started doing stress testing. Back, I did my military career back in the 1960s. With over 350,000 treadmill stress tests now, on people even past 90 years of age. I'm happy to say we've never had a death with stress testing. Exercise people, too exhausting is what I call the bulky protocol. Treadmill is flat, the first minute increase 2%, and 1% increase for the 25th minute, standard speed 3.3 miles per hour. If you go longer than that, it's 20, you increase the speed to 20 miles per hour per minute. The test, retest reliability coefficient on that is a 0.9. If I test you today, you walk 15 minutes to the treadmill, and come back and with a heart rate of 170. Bring you back 3 days later, you'll walk 15 minutes plus or minus 15 seconds, heart rate of 170. Unbelievable how the body responds. So we can prove that. So what we do with the stress testing, first of all, look at your EKG, look for abnormalities. But what we've been looking at particularly is look at your level of fitness measured by your time on the treadmill. It's age and sex adjusted. In men, less than 30, 50, 59, 60, 69. Here's the bottom 20 percentile here, next 20 percentile, next 20 percentile, next 20 percentile, make up the top 20 percentile. Superior casual top 5 percentile. 50, 59, 60, 69, 70, 79, 80 plus. As I mentioned, George Bush is my patient, my friend. His last examination, at 62 years of age, he walked 25 minutes and 1 second on the treadmill. Top 1 percentile for his age group. He exercised an hour 6 days a week. I've asked him more than once. George, what's the stress of your occupation? Low, moderate, high stress? Ask him that every year. Can you believe he always says moderate stress? George, how can that be? Low, moderate, high stress, moderate stress, most stress in the world, call it moderate stress. He said it wouldn't be that way except for my fitness, exercise for my head, not my heart, and my faith. That's what he said, folks. That's the real George Bush. So again, if he can find the time to exercise to control the stress in his life, America, what is your excuse? Think about that. Girls, less, much less. Objective determined. 350,000 studies make up these charts. You can't argue about this. Bottom 5 percentile, bottom 20 percentile. We took some 14,000 healthy men and women back in 1971. We followed them for 4 years. Ended up with 13,600 healthy men and women. They've been followed for 4 years. They're in good shape. They watched them for 8.6 years and looked at all-cause mortality versus measured levels of fitness and published our most famous article in the JMA, Fitness to All-Cause Mortality, published November the 3rd, 1989. Front page, major newspapers around the world. The first time for 30 years, American Heart Association brought up along with high blood pressure, high cholesterol, serious blood pressure, inactivity, made a major coronary risk factor based upon this study. What did it show? It showed that those men who were healthy and followed for 4 years, but deconditioned, that small causes way up here. Those who were in the top 20 percentile down here, drop off from here to here was 65%. Drop off from here to here was 58%. We always thought before this study, you had to exercise your target heart rate zone 20 minutes 4 times a week, 30 minutes 3 times a week, otherwise you're wasting your time. We didn't have any idea your best return to fitness investment isn't going from very to poor to excellent superior, it's going from very poor to poor, and we discovered this new zone called the health and longevity fitness. All right, we said here's a 58% reduction in decimal causes and a 6-year increase in longevity. Here is a 65% reduction in decimal causes and a 9-year increase in longevity. I said that in 1989. Look what happened in January this year. Telomeres are protective tips on bundles of genes inside cells. Every time a cell divides, telomeres get shorter. Aging occurs as cells reach the end of the telomere and die. Muscle weakness, skin wrinkles, and thinking clouds. What did they discover looking at these twins from Great Britain? If exercise 16 minutes a week, no change. Exercise 100 minutes per week, you reduce in age or increase your lifespan by 6 years. 180 minutes, by 9 years. What I said back in 1989 has not been improved at the cellular level. An article just came out in Lancet just a couple months ago by a research group in San Francisco. They took a small group, 24 people, had them work in the program for 6 months, and they increased their telomeres by 26%. Actually, can reverse aging. It's fascinating to know that one can grow healthier as one grows older, not necessarily the reverse. We also been looking at overweight people. They followed 22,000 men for an average of 8 years. All-cause mortality, cardiovascular mortality. And we looked at percent body fat from skin folds and gold standard underwater weight. And what do we find? We found that those men who were obese, about 25% above 30 BMI scale, but in the top 80 percentile versus those who were skinny, but the bottom 20 percentile, found out for all-cause mortality, you're better off being fat and fit than skinny and unfit. I'm not promoting obesity. But I'm telling you, America, if you can just get active, even though you're overweight, you see dramatic changes. Reduction in decimal all-cause mortality, look at cardiovascular mortality, and look at cancer mortality. It's obvious. What does it take? What happens here? We find, first of all, the reason most people exercise all these years is because the quality of life that they experience. You ask people, I'm curious, curiosity. How many of you are regular exercisers? Let's see a show of hands. Well, the vast majority. It's like speaking to the choir this morning. Appreciate that. If I were to ask you, what motivates you to keep exercising year after year, majority would say, because it makes me what?
Feel good.
Feel good. That's right. We know that. Can you document that? Not published yet. 10,031 men. 31 men. This is amazing. Looking at aerobic fitness, health longevity fitness, sedentary. Look at all these factors, qualities of life. Fatigue, snoring, heartburn, sex problems, decreased sex drive, impotence of men. Look at chronic joint or muscle pain, low back pain, headaches, difficulty sleeping, depression, anxiety. Can you believe all 36 blocks are right in line, all submit the 0.001 level? We are beautifully and wonderfully made. It says that in Psalms, doesn't it? Look at what we can do. And that will promote fitness more than anything else, is you can tell people they're going to feel better. It may protect me having a heart attack 10 to 15 years downrange, but I can start feeling better immediately if I start exercising. What's it take to get in these categories? I said this back in 1960. It hasn't changed much over the years. Kind of interesting to me yesterday, talking about the new guidelines from CDC, and they talk about intensity, duration of activity. I talked about that 40 years ago. You can't just look at frequency, you've got to look at intensity and duration. You can't look at just the pedometer, you've got to look at the accelerometer. It's not just the number of steps, it's the intensity of the step. So we awarded points based on intensity and duration of the activity, 41 different exercises back in 1968, and you get points based upon the speed and intensity. For example, if you walk a mile in 18 minutes, you get 1 point. If you run a mile in 8 minutes, you get 5 points. You run 3 miles in 24 minutes, you get 17 points. Top exercise, number one, cross-country skiing. Number two is swimming. Number three is jogging. Number four is cycling. Number five is walking. Here's an example. You want to be in that top 35 percentile. If you want to get a 6-year increase in a 9-year increase in longevity, 35 aerobic points per week, and get that by, here's 36 points right here, 2 months and 20 minutes 4 times a week, that's jogging. You walk 3 miles, 45 minutes 5 times a week, that's 40 points. Work done 45 minutes 4 times a week, that's 36 points. What if I want to get just health and longevity fitness? I don't care. I could care less about aerobic fitness. All I want to do is decrease decimal causes by 58%, increase my lifespan by 6 years, and the answer is 15 points a week. Now, we've got more data than anybody. We have over 100,000 patients, followed for 1.2 million person years of follow-up. We just joined forces at Southwestern Medical School in Dallas to analyze that data. Plus, we now have the Cooper Southwestern Biobank because we've been collecting blood samples on people since 1970. We have 35,000 blood samples stored, and we're going to be able to look at those people that have already died and look at their biomarkers and look at their genes, genetics, DNA. It's going to be phenomenal. We may find things that we could have known 15, 20 years ago if we had known now that we could have changed genetically with our new database. We're very, very pleased to announce that relationship just signed with Southwestern Medical School. They have 4 Nobel laureates in our research institute in Dallas. So what does it take? 15 points a week, 2 miles in 30 minutes, that's pretty fast. All right, 2 miles in 35 minutes 4 times a week, 2 miles in 40 minutes 5 times a week, 3 miles in 45 minutes 2 times a week, we'll be down to 45 minutes twice a week. Oh boy, here we go again. I guess that's telling my time is up. Well, I'm not going to go through this again. I was going to show you some slides of people that had achieved phenomenal things. And one of those was a man who was Johnny Kelly. I ran the Boston Marathon back in 1962, 1963. Strange, interesting situation here. I was an athlete in high school and college. Ran track, University of Oklahoma, a miler. And back in those days, no one had ever broken the 4-minute mile. They said, horses can't run that fast. Only men can't run that fast. Only horses can run that fast. Went to May the 6th, 1954, Roger Banners became the first person to break the 4-minute mile. Over 1,000 men have broken the 4-minute mile. John Walker has now broken it 100 times, and Steve Scott 100 times, and yet we thought you couldn't even break 4-minute miles. I was in Oxford, England on the 6th of May, 2004, when Sir Roger Bannister was acknowledged for the 50th year since he'd broken the 4-minute mile. And standing right next to him with a guy from Morocco who held the world's record, 17 seconds under the 4-minute mile. Yes, I ran the Boston Marathon back in 1963. I was dead tired, I'll guarantee you, after running 26 miles. But Johnny Kelly beat me by an hour, and he was 57 years of age. I was 33. At 57 years of age, he ran his 26 miles, averaging 6:30 a mile at 57 years of age. Johnny Kelly kept running. In fact, in 1982, he was attempting to run his 60th Boston Marathon. International press covered it. All asked him the same question. Johnny, how do you know it's safe to run a 26-mile marathon? His tender response for everybody was the same. Because my doctor, Ken Cooper, located in Dallas, Texas, said it's safe. I've been doing his exam every year. Every time I heard that, every time I read that, I thought, Lord, please don't let him die. Well, he finished the marathon that year. He came back the next year, ran his 61st Boston Marathon at age 84. Wow. and announced the retired marathon running, and I said, thank you, Lord. Some great stories. I think one of the classics is Fambino. Sorry, I couldn't show your picture. Fan's my page for 25 years. And in summer of 2004, she set a new world's record for the 3,000-meter race walk over in Spain. And that's for people over 85 years of age. She's 87 and a half. She came back to send me the nicest letter. Dr. Cooper, because of you, I forgot to grow old. Isn't that great? I forgot to grow old. I was going to show you a picture of Rick Selesky, featured twice in Oprah Winfrey, one of my patients. Came to me back in 2000, weighing 539 pounds. Took him as a special case, no bypass surgery, just put him with a special personal trainer, dietitian, used our center every day. He lost 300 pounds in 2 years, and he's kept it off for 6 years. Last week I heard the strangest thing. The Winfrey program called him back. Want to see if he's kept the weight off? No. They want to take people and gain it all back. They had no interest in people who got all that weight off and kept it off. They want to talk to people who gained it back. You believe that? It's ridiculous. No, we found that it's fascinating to know you can grow healthy as you grow older and not the reverse. Remember, too, we've got a challenge now. We've got a window of opportunity as far as our kids are concerned. If we don't do something in the immediate future, we're going to suffer cost of medical care, reduction of longevity, and the rest of the world is going to pass us by. Well, I've been invited to go to China, to Japan, Germany. Other people are paying attention. We're not. America, open your eyes. We're going to have a very dismal future. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much, Dr. Cooper. We'll reserve questions until the end. In the meantime, we have our wonderful panel who are going to react from their perspective professions. So first of all, let's have Dr. Paul before you. And I'm going to ask each of them to tell you who they are, where they work, and then go into their reactions to what Dr. Cooper has said.
I'm Dave Paul. I'm a assistant professor at the University of Idaho in Moscow, Idaho, which the more I'm at this conference, I'd never been to Idaho until I job interviewed, and I don't think anybody else in here has ever been in the state either. I thought that was interesting. One person. Okay. My primary interest is in over the years has been doing clinical nutrition research and looking at physical activity in adults with accelerometers, which I think Dr. Cooper has mentioned. And has really sort of stimulated my interest in looking at exercise intensity and what these things are as far as estimates of energy balance. So at the University of Idaho, I teach and I'm working on statewide initiatives which with school children, which caught my interest. I guess my reaction is I have a couple of different questions for Dr. Cooper, I guess. I hope this is the right format, I suppose. First off, I think as a clinical researcher, I've always liked the work from the Cooper Clinic because there's been a data-driven aspect to what they do. Because I think that we are in danger of over-promising how well physical activity really works, solves world peace and everything else. And I think we have to be careful to make sure that we only go as far as the data actually follows it. So the data has to be following the lead. I guess one of the slides that caught my attention was the slide that looked at physical activity levels and academic performance in California. So my first thought was, well, we know that academic performance and BMI is a mix of ethnicity, location, socioeconomic status, and a lot of other issues. So I don't know if Dr. Cooper can actually answer this question, maybe later on with the data from throughout the state, is what is the relative strength of physical activity versus socioeconomic status, ethnicity, location, so forth. I think the one slide is I lived in El Paso, Texas for a year. El Paso, Texas is what about 65% Latinos, I think. And so the fact that they had such dramatic improvements sort of takes the ethnicity out of it. And also there's mixes of socioeconomic status in the state or in the city, depends on where it was. So I think that we can be relatively confident there. The other thing I have to wonder is that the issue when you talk about obesity, you have to be worried about energy balance. You have to have some sort of a stimulus to increase energy expenditure and or decrease energy intake. It's a pretty fundamental issue. I get concerned when you have PE classes that are only 30 minutes long. You lose 5 or 10 minutes, kids changing clothes and whatever else. And hopefully we're moving in a direction of understanding the doses of physical activity in the classes, how long the duration is, how long the intensity is. And I'm curious if hopefully Dr. Cooper knows or has a good idea of the types of programs and how long they are versus the ones that are not very effective. I guess my last reaction is I'm on a initiative to start doing statewide body mass index measurements throughout the state of Idaho. We've only been able to do this because of a State Department of Education funding from the CDC that had absolutely nothing to do with physical activity or BMI, and they've sort of included us in on this project. So our initiative has absolutely nothing to do with Governor Otter or any other state legislature. His wife is a former PE teacher. We thought that's our end, but we don't really know. So the question I'd have for Dr. Cooper is, how does someone in a state who doesn't know the president and doesn't know the governor, and how do you get their ear to allocate real funding to initiate programs so that we're not doing it on our own? You can make the argument that perhaps government can't solve all of our problems, but it'd be nice to have influence to the superintendents. We've had superintendents don't last go in the schools. And perhaps if we have state government intervention, not just financially, that it would make our life a lot easier being able to have interventions in schools. So hopefully not too vague for you.
Thank you, Paul. Take those in reverse. All right, Governor Perry is so excited about this. After the election, he'll be sending challenges to all the governors to do what we've done in Texas and all the states. How many will do it? I don't know. But we're going to start from that standpoint. He's excited about that. As far as ethnicity, El Paso is a classic example. But you're right, they have 90 minutes every other day in their school. Now, we recommended 45 minutes three times a week, or 225 minutes over a two-week period. Minimum 30 minutes 5 days, which you're right. That's hardly enough time to be able to get a good PE program. As far as ethnicity, too, is concerned, that's why you saw in Texas how there was a marked difference there between the African-American Hispanics as versus the Caucasians and the Asians, and that was in Austin, Texas. In Dallas, Texas, DISD, Dallas Independent School District, is 93% African-American and Hispanic. And they only 11% to pass the test. All right, this big article came out of the newspaper a week following the major release that we had, and it said that the reason schools in Dallas make better grades is because of the wealthier schools. Only 36% of Highland Park, the wealthiest school area in Dallas, could pass the test. And El Paso had 59%, and that's not very good. We're right down the list, they said, and because that these wealthy kids get home from school, they go out and have their soccer, their ballet, their activities. And that's the reason they make better grades. We looked at more closely, though, and looking at the 5th through the 8th grade as they looked at Highland Park, and we found the number 2 on the list, Highland Park had 0 poor kids in their area, but number 2 on the list had 50% of poor kids in their area, and that was Richardson. Garland was number 3, 50%, because they had good PE programs. So don't tell me it's wealthiness in the community, it's a PE program. El Paso is a very poor area. You know that. They're setting the example for the state because they got one dedicated PE teacher, Don Disney, who's setting up this program. So we have no question about that. Also, we have a special project in Dallas. What I want to do, haven't done that yet, may start in the spring of this next year. I want to get MRI scans of the brains of some of these young kids. We have 50 kids now. I'm providing without cost. 50 kids at our center in Dallas and out at Craig Ranch, from McKinney, Texas. And these are kids who scored very poorly academically and physically as juniors in high school. We've offered them a 10-week program at no cost. They're coming out twice a week for boot camp. That's 75 minutes twice a week. And then they come out on weekends as guests using our fabulous fitness centers. And I've been amazed. And the superintendents, the principals, the teachers have been so amazed. The response of those kids. Here they're from South Dallas. They're very poor kids. Have a chance to be and associate in this very beautiful place. Have people express some interest. You wouldn't believe the comments we're getting. For the first time in my life, somebody's expressing interest in me. Now, these are troubled kids, by and large. But having somebody just spend some time and work with them, now, is that the physical aspect of it? Or is the fact somebody's working with them is a big thing? Another thing you two talked about, the data. Of course, we've made our career on data. We talk about facts, not fiction. It was 1984. I was on Nightline, and I was debating Henry Solomon, a cardiologist from New York who just written the book entitled The Exercise Myth. Dr. Cooper, you have nothing to prove that exercise does anything but make you feel good. All data to date is suspect. The Longshoreman study from LA, from California, the Harvard nurses study, the Harvard professional study, the bus driver and conductor study in Great Britain, all were based upon questionnaire. They don't correlate well. You have no data published to date that shows exercise does anything but make you feel good. You know, I said, Dr. Solomon, you're right. National TV, I said that. We're going to blow you out of the water, though, in the near future, because I knew I was collecting this data. And so then by 1989, we published that famous article. It's been referenced 1,500 times. Landmark study of the century, answering the question how much exercise is enough. It's what the Heart Association said. And once that was published, you don't hear anything else about that from Dr. Solomon. So we do, we've published over 500 papers now, the last 37 years, all the major journals. So I think it's safe to say our results are too impressive to be ignored, concentrating on data. Energy balance, something very important too. We have the present time with the fitness gram equipment. It costs $300 to get the equipment for the school, 9,000 schools had raised all the money for that out of private funding. But then they get an activity gram. And so you can keep a record of what the kids are doing. Working right now, the Department of Agriculture in Texas to get established the Nutrigram, in which we have a way of analyzing the diets of the schools. And so we'll have the same type of data in the not too distant future, 9,000 schools, what they're serving their kids for lunch and for breakfast, and be able to quantify that, evaluate that, and make recommendations. Because you're exactly right. The energy balance versus energy out is the important thing. So working on that very actively with the development of the Nutrigram. All right, the BMI. Don't rely too much on the BMI. Not long ago, I was asked to go to Georgia, to Atlanta, and testify before the legislature because they had a war brewing in Atlanta, the whole state, particularly in Atlanta, because they're going to make BMI testing mandatory twice a year. And boy, the parents were up in arms. That's not fair. My son's a football player. He can't pass the BMI test. So I went down, and they tried very hard to get BMI testing twice a year in Atlanta. They couldn't pass it, but yet they've been testing height and weight for years. But you couldn't translate it to BMI, because that indicates that my son, my daughter, is overweight when they're muscular. So I went down there and testified. I said, people of Atlanta, you're right. Unless you have some type of physical measurement along with that, like a mile-and-a-half run or a mile run, something of that type, that's what you use in the military. If a guy couldn't pass the mile-and-a-half run test, the 12-minute test we developed in the military years ago, then if they were overweight, rather, if they use that test and pass, we'd care less about what they weighed. So they could miss the standard as far as weight was concerned, BMI, but if they perform well physically, that was ignored. So I told the people in Georgia, you got to bring in something like the fitness gram to look not only at BMI, but look at physical performance. Because you'd be fat and fit, you'd be skinny and unfit. Keep that in mind. So I think that answers your questions.
Good morning and welcome to beautiful San Diego. I live here. I'm blessed and I know it. Thank you on behalf of school nurses in San Diego and all over. I appreciate being asked to sit with this esteemed panel here and give you my take just on who we are at my school. I've been at Horton Elementary, which is about 12 miles west of here. I've been there 23 years, and I will tell you that I enjoy most every day there. I'm interested in this problem that Dr. Cooper has identified because these are my children. I speak to you on behalf of the principal at my school and the children, especially little Jasmine. Jasmine saw me getting ready, pulling some things together yesterday, and she said, "Ms. Jaworski, what are you doing?" And I said, "Well, I'm getting ready to speak to the big boys and girls." And she said, "The big boys and girls?" And I said, "Yeah." "So what are you going to talk to them about?" I said, "I'm going to talk to them about you." Oh, she said, "What about me?" And I said, "Well, what you do here at school." Oh, she said, "I like recess." I said, "I know you do. What do you like about it?" "Oh, we run and play, and the teachers, you know, show us some games, and I like that parachute thing," and on and on and on. And I said, "Well, do you play at home, Jasmine?" "Oh, no." She said, "No, no." She said, "Mommy's not home, and my brother and sister and I, we go in the house, and we sit and wait for Mommy to come home." And I was going through a coloring book that we had put out by our dental group here in San Diego, The Magic of Going to School. And so you'll remember, Jasmine, and I know you do, you will, I've got a coloring page here for you. Remember, I'm elementary, so I can't help this. It makes me feel better. So first I will give the page to our esteemed panel here, and then to you. It's going out to play, this page. It says, "At home, I get my schoolwork done. Now I can play and have some fun." The children, if you'd like to be my monitor here, the children at my school do not know how to play. As I said, I've been there 23 years. I'm a nurse practitioner. I'm a family nurse practitioner. I have my master's in school nursing from the beautiful University of San Diego right here up on the hill. And I've become increasingly aware as I've been at my school some of the things I do every day. Every year, I've been doing heights and weights up the yin-yang. And what do I do with them? I put them on a little card. I say who that task is done. I have the children who are overweight. I identify them. I talk to their parents, call the parents in, and the parents are overweight. And we sit and talk about whatever. Refer them to their clinician who sends them for a workup, metabolic workup at Children's, and they come back. And he or she, the healthcare provider, is as frustrated as I am. 5 years ago, I got a call from Dr. Leon Kelly, one of our pediatricians down the street from my school. He's been in practice 34 years at that site. He said, "I want to come to your back-to-school night." And I'm like, "Oh, okay." So he comes to back-to-school night, and he shares with the parents who were impressed, "My kid's pediatrician is up there." His frustration with the lack of physical activity, the number of fast food restaurants visually that you can see from his office to where my school is, the fact that our community, the built community, that's a term I like to use now because the politicians use it, so I'll practice it again. The built community, the built environment, does not support our families walking from here to there. We have no bike paths. We have no rec center. We have a lot of things that we don't have. What we do have is caring parents. And so that began a journey that we took. First, a little bit about who we are. At my school, 650 some odd children, 80% Hispanic, 10% African American, 60 to 70% at any one time do not have health insurance. Mobility rate, 60 to 70%. We have a community in flux. 100% of the children at my school are free lunch. What we offer is a breakfast program, so that would be free to all children. Only a third of the children participate in the free breakfast program. Every child that comes into my office ill, and I say to them, "Well, did you have breakfast this morning?" They'll either say, "No," or, "Well, I ate at home." "Well, what did you eat?" "Well, I had a piece of whatever, or a glass of juice, or maybe some soda, or maybe my favorite, flaming hot Cheetos," which are referred to in the industry as extruded snack food. Why aren't they coming to our free breakfast? Our school starts 7:15 for breakfast, 7:40 in the classroom. Between 7:30 and 7:40, they can go up on the upper playground and they walk with the principal. Why aren't they coming to breakfast? I don't have an answer for that. That's a question for Dr. Cooper. Why aren't they coming to breakfast? We also offer breakfast in the classroom. where a transport cooler is brought down to the cafeteria. They race it back to classroom, and the teacher provides an environment where the kids can eat their breakfast. Our teachers, and I'm here, I'm not proud of this, but I'm going to tell you the truth. Our teachers voted that down because they didn't want to deal with it. They didn't want ants or cockroaches. But they really were. They were this big in the classroom. You know, that's something we're working on. The day we had the most children for the breakfast program was the day after Miss California came to our school and sang Over the Rainbow at lunch and told the children she ate 5 meals a day in order to keep her energy level up. That day, the next day, we almost had 50% at our breakfast program. What are we doing at Horton? We here, and I'm sure it's all over the United States, had to develop a wellness policy. You know, the state, and then the county, and then the school district. And I was on that committee. And I don't like wasting my time. If we're going to do it, we're going to do something that's believable and doesn't sit on one of those binders. I know you know those binders. They're on the shelf. They're white. You know. How do you know when it's time to retire? When you have no more room for the binders. If I was going to be on that committee, we were going to create something that had meaning and that the children and the families at my school knew. I know you can't read this, but you can believe it. This is the Horton Wellness Policy. We made it giant, and it addresses two things so far. When we started working on it, I said, well, we're going to do something that doesn't depend on the principal we have now, doesn't depend on me, and it's something that will go on without us. So we addressed celebrations, how we celebrate, and healthy food and beverage policy. And we went into delineating what that was. And then my principal asked the teachers if they would sign it. We put it in a mat, had them sign their name, first grade teacher, had parents sign it. Dr. Kelly, when he came to our back to school night, he and his associate signed it. And every year, I drag that thing down to Aaron Brothers and get a new mat for it and start over having them sign it. Integrating it into who they are at our school, to me, had some meaning to the longevity of it. All right, that's just one small thing. What do we do when we talk to parents? We always ask screen time. I ask what do they do after school. When we have youngsters who are overweight, I'm very conscious of them. I don't want them to be ostracized in their family. Well, somebody came along one time and said, you know, that would be a great math exercise. Let's weigh the kids and teach them how to use the BMI formula, and they can determine what that is in the classroom, and everybody will know everybody's BMI. I said, I don't think so. Not on my watch. And I know skinfold test is better, but the BMI happened to be the only tool I had. I've been doing the heights and weights for 23 years. Finally, I decided, well, let's put them into something that will create language or a graph or something that I can get some mileage out of. So using the CDC's EpiInfo, I sat down and plugged that all in and created a graph with the BMIs and had the little dots. And I saw over time that 50% of the kindergarten class that we were bringing in was at the 85th percentile or above. Now calculating error and body structure and so forth, that's still way too high for my book. Also, it provided a language that when Bob Filner, our assemblyman, I think he's the assemblyman anyway, came to our school for a town hall meeting, and he was talking about the community, and some of the things the children wanted, skateboard park, etc. I had this clutched to myself, and Mr. Filner, I have a picture of the children to give you. And he's looking at me like, oh, you got to be kidding. I need one more shot of toothless children waving. Instead, I gave him my BMI graph. And he said, what is that? And I explained it to him. And he said, can I have that? And I said, yes. And we talked about the lack of a rec center There is no park in our community. The children at my school have burns on their knees from gravel. Their families don't know about grass stains. They don't play in the grass. They play in the parking lot or in the gravel parking lot. And so I don't know if anything ever came of that, but he walked away with it, and it made me feel better. And my last two comments, at our school, through the lunch program, the children go and get their entree, and then they can get their salad. And some of us function as salad bar coaches. Billy, why don't you put something green on there? Oh, I don't like green. We'll go with yellow. All right, we'll put the yellow on. And they take like three peas. They'll put three peas. But the next day when I'm standing there, they'll look at me and they'll put maybe some lettuce, romaine I might add, or maybe some apple slices. And kids love a coach. We all do. We all like somebody that notices us and supports what we're doing. And they'll go, see, Mr. Worski, look what I got on there now. I said, that's great. That's great. Our kindergarten teachers have to instruct the children, of course, what a salad bar is, because most of them haven't been to a salad bar. The other thing is portion size. When we talk to our parents, I always try to have materials that can show what's a portion. Now, I noticed Dr. Cooper didn't mention names of restaurants, and I won't either. However, there's several nearby. And the portion size, you could invite the whole family to join in the one meal. It's a great restaurant, I will mention, Hash House A Go-Go. You can always tell the people who've been there before, because there'll be one plate in the center, you know, and they're sharing. The people who have never been there before each get an entree, and the plate is like a platter. Unbelievable. Portion control has to be gone over with parents, because kids don't understand it. And when food is put on a plate, breastfed babies will self-limit. Bottle-fed babies won't. Same thing with anyone at a meal. Here in San Diego, we have the County Obesity Action Plan. We're not alone in this. At my elementary school, we know there are other groups to support us: the child, the family, the school community, certainly, in providing the environment. And we need to change that environment to make it supportive of our fitness goals. The industry, the food industry, all those snacks out there now that are 100 calories. The Junior League has a program where they'll do programs in the evening for parents and actually have stations that the children go through with their parent. Snacks, use of pedometers, use of jump rope. You don't need to have an incredible play structure. The children at my school, their parents don't pick them up after school for soccer or baseball. Parents are at work. There's no after-school program other than we provide. So in closing, I asked my principal, if I could ask Dr. Cooper or the panel for anything, what would you want? And she said she'd like more minutes in an hour. And I said, I don't know about that. And then she'd like a credentialed PE teacher. We have one. But we had to make a choice at our school that I, as a parent, never had to make. We had to choose between music and PE. Thank you.
I appreciate your comments. As far as the breakfast situation, how do you make it more acceptable for the children? We don't know, but we know in South Texas, along the border, that some of the Hispanic students, the only meal they get per day is at school, period. And they're eating both breakfast and lunch, because that's all they get. To make them more attractive, I think what you said is excellent. Being a coach, I thought that was very good. Be sitting there in the line and encouraging them to eat the proper vegetables, things of that nature. Not many comments, but just to congratulate you on what you're doing.
tough to be one of the last persons that stands between you and lunch, right? How many of you are familiar? Well, maybe I'll tell you who I am. I'm Larry Olson. I'm from Las Cruces, New Mexico. I'm kind of an interesting individual in that I'm the product of a professional wrestler and a concert pianist. So the analogy between physical education and music and the choice, I was always in a conflict. On one side, you're being pulled to participate in athletics and so forth. On the other side, you know, I took piano lessons. I was a trumpet player. I had my own dance band. I wrote my own arrangements. I started out in college as a music major and switched over into health and physical education. Right now, I'm within 5 pounds of the weight that I played college football. And last night, I had the opportunity to talk with a group of people about the spirit of 1848. This is 160 years and so forth, and I indicated that in 1942, there were two major events that occurred. Number one, the school health education and services section of this particular organization was certified as a section, and the second one, I was born. So I've been around for a day or two. I've actually belonged to the American Public Health Association since 1965. So you can get involved in these kind of things. I always say to students, get involved, stay involved, make a difference. How many of you are familiar with the Centers for Disease Control Youth Risk Behavior Surveys? You familiar with those? How many of you have seen this book, School Profiles? I tried and tried and tried to get this and finally had to call CDC Dash, and they sent it to me. Because if you go to the CDC info, you got to download it. It's 139 pages. How many of you want to download 139 pages? Graduates didn't do it. Yeah, there you go. But the Centers for Disease Control conducts these studies on a regular basis. Every other year they come out with school profiles. And what I want to do is I want to highlight a couple of things that are in that and maybe pose some challenges. I'm the incoming chair. I'm a recycled chair. I did this before of the School Health Education and Services section. We're a small section, but we pose challenges, and I've been the chair of the ISC, so we pose challenges to the executive committee, and I'm also the program planner, and I'm going to be pushing promoting an international responsibility for healthy children. Now, how do I tie that into water for next year's theme? I haven't figured that out yet, but in this particular study, they studied 34 states and 12 cities. They do this every year. All of the data for this particular, the 2006 issue, were collected in the spring of 05, or in Texas, sorry about that, Dr. Cooper, in Texas they did it in the fall of 06. And this says Profiles 2006, it's just now coming out, so they're a little bit behind. But what's really interesting about this study is they looked at physical education, along with a whole lot of other things, but physical education specifically in grades 6 to 12, and that's what I want to talk to you about, and these are some of the challenges. I'm not going to ask you to raise your hand for any of these things, but I want to pose a challenge to the 20-some of us that we have in here, because if 20 of us do something in our own districts, the word will spread. Required physical education in any grade. In states, it ran from 36.8% to 100%. So some states require physical education in every grade. The median, was 97.3%. In cities, it ran from 44 to 100% with a median of 95.6%. 18.1% of the states, only 18.1% of the states required a course in physical education, required. In the cities, it was 27.5%. Two-course requirement. Now, remember, this is 6 through 12. Two-course requirement. In the states, it was 76.6%. In the cities, remember, this is 12 cities, 61.1%. And you can guess what cities they are, things like Los Angeles, Cincinnati, New York, and so forth. The number of states that required, or I shouldn't say the number, but the percentage of states that required an individual to repeat the physical education course, if they failed it, 55.6%. So you can go in there and not do anything, you can fail it, and you don't have to do it again in about 44.4% of the states. In the cities, it was 52.1, so they've come together, they've converged. They've converged a little bit. Is there something that we can do about that? I think so. Right now, the median of states that require brand newly hired physical educators to actually be certified in physical education, the median is 97.0%. But it ranges from 35 to 100%. So 35% of the states don't require a newly hired physical educator to in fact be licensed and or certified in physical education. I wonder if we ought to continue to call it physical education, because what we're really talking about, I think Dr. Cooper would agree, is we're really talking about physical activity. I don't know how many of you, when I was in school, we had separated physical education for boys and girls, and because we were in athletics, we always took our physical education program the last period of the day in high school, because it wasn't physical education, it was an extension of the sport program. So all the athletes took physical education at the very end, so you had time to dress and all that sort of thing. That really shouldn't be allowed to happen. And I think Dean mentioned that it should be, how much time do we waste in getting, dressing and undressing and this and that, and how much time is actually spent in active physical education? I'd like to see the whole professional preparation programs changed to training a physical activity specialist rather than perhaps than a physical educator. I might get in some trouble with NASSP, the National Association of Sport and Physical Fitness, by saying that. But listen to some of the exemptions for getting out of the required physical education program. I hadn't thought about this, and maybe some of you can enlighten me, and I'm not trying to cast too many rocks. You can be exempt from physical education programs in a number of areas on religious grounds. Maybe it's because of the uniforms or whatever. Maybe that's what it probably boils down to. But listen to some of these things. You can be exempt from physical education if you have long-term physical or mental disabilities. Didn't we already show, Dr. Cooper's material showed, that people with the low IQs and so forth, they actually did better if they got involved in physical activity? Why should that be something that would exempt them from physical education? They can enroll in other courses. Oh, I should mention one other thing. If you have a cognitive disability, you can be exempted from physical education. I mean, I had a mental hernia. Maybe I should have been exempted. I don't know. Is that a cognitive disability? I don't know. But listen to these. You can enroll in another course and be exempted from physical education in a number of states. And specifically what was mentioned was science and math. That escapes me a little bit. Is there something that we might be able to do about that? What about getting involved in another school activity? ROTC? Maybe that's okay. Maybe that's okay. But band and chorus. I mean, I was in the choir. I played in the band. I couldn't see that I got a lot of physical activity in the choir program. In the band, we marched, but not a whole lot. That's not going to do that sort of thing. I don't go out and play my trumpet and march in a band now. That's not a lifetime physical activity. What we need to do is inculcate in children today that they, as individuals, need to get off their behinds. We really don't need chairs that recognize your butt when you sit down in them. That's a problem that we have right now. We've got too many couch potatoes. They can get involved in community sports. Well, there are an awful lot of community sports that the kids never really participate. They're on the sidelines all the time, but that should exempt them. And how many of us, I couldn't play football today. I mean, my mind says what I should do when I'm playing softball, but my body can't react to that. So should we be doing these lifetime sport activities, or should we be doing lifetime movement or physical activity types of things? If you get a high physical fitness score, and I don't think they use the fitness gram on this, Dr. Cooper, but if you get a high physical fitness score one time, you're exempted from physical education. What's wrong with this picture? And this one was an interesting one. You can be exempted from physical education if you participate in what they call vocational training. I want to be a welder, so I'm exempted from physical education activities. And you can participate in community service activities and be exempted from physical education in many of these states. I would like to propose that what we might want to do to our in our particular school districts, many of the schools have the children sign an abstinence pact. You've heard of those kind of things? Why don't we have them sign a fitness pact? Couldn't we do something similar and get people moving? Well, what are some other things that we can do? How many of us have actually tried to do, we heard about the built environment. How many of us have gone to our city council and said, you know, you're building a subdivision, put in your bike paths, put in your walking paths. Let's get a safe route to school. You know, the YRBS shows that a lot of children are afraid to walk to school because of the violence. What did Dr. Cooper's stuff show? Physical activity, violence goes down. The more we do, the less it happens. We can do these positive kind of things. And I'll close with a couple of other things, and I think Dr. Cooper will mention this. What about the governor of Arkansas, Dr. Huckabee? Look at how much weight he lost. And I just found out that Governor Huckabee is one of Dr. Cooper's patients. Maybe he'll talk about that briefly. The other thing is that it's Dr. Cooper shared with us some comments that President Bush made about his activity and stress. And I'll close with this. Why doesn't he say that in public? Why doesn't he say it in public? Whether you like him or don't like him is neither here nor there. That's a heck of a testimony, because that's the highest stress-related job that I can imagine, other than maybe being an astronaut, knowing that you're on a rocket that was made by the lowest bidder. That's a little scary. But if the president of this country says his physical activity allows him to say his stress is in the moderate level, do we even begin to have stress of that level? Why doesn't he say that openly? Yet what's happening? Money for education is being cut back. Things are happening in school districts where they're having to make a decision, do we hire a new science teacher or do we hire a physical educator? And you know where that's going. Because schools get their money based on test scores. Gee whiz, test scores, physical activity. You want to increase your test scores, get the kids active. Thanks.
Thank you, Larry. The time is up, I know. A couple of comments. I've asked the president the same thing. I want to let the people know how you use fitness to control the stress in your life. For some reason, he's opted not to do that. Even when he was governor of Texas, he didn't put much emphasis on the governor's commission on fitness for some reason. And as president for 8 years, he has done very little as far as the president's council on fitness is concerned. I don't understand that. And I've asked him verbatim that. To the contrary, as you mentioned, Governor Huckabee has been my friend, my patient for many years. In fact, I was on his advisory committee when he was running for president. He did lose 110 pounds. Because at 52 years of age, weighing over 300 pounds, he was told by his physician, if you don't lose weight, you'll be lucky to make it at age 60. So he's impressed to the extent that he took that weight off, and now he's a regular marathoner at 53, 54 years of age. So there are examples. Larry, your points were very well taken. But in Texas, we have 1,000 schools that have no PE teacher at all, period. And less than 50% of the PE teachers in Texas are certified PE teachers. Out in El Paso, they have certified PE teachers. You may have noticed that. And also, as I mentioned, they have other things. The U.S. Tennis Association is working with them, with their programs. They've diversified it to make it interesting. So there are ways that you can have programs that are exciting and challenging that the students will participate in. But again, I'm convinced we'll not have any success with the students until we get the parents involved, without question. Just recently in Dallas, they had a very popular magazine called The Dallas Child, and they featured grandparents and their children. I should have brought that with me. Here's a full-page spread. My wife on one side, myself on the other side, and our four grandkids, ranging from 9 months to 6 years of age. That's why my obsession to do something to change the health of America, starting with the kids. Thank you.
Well, what can I say? It's a wonderful, wonderful panel. Thank you very much for all of your expertise, and thank you, Dr. Cooper. We have about 1 or 2 minutes, and probably not even that, but are there any questions in the audience? Yes.
That's an outstanding recommendation. And within the realm of what we can do in Texas, we might do that on the next testing of 2009.
Yeah.
Might add that to our, it is a possibility. That's right. The violence, I think, is very important, too, that did go down in these children.
Yes.
As I told you before, what the superintendents really want is grades, violence, they want absenteeism, rather, violence, and grades. One thing that was mentioned, too, is getting excused from PE because you're an athlete. The best programs in America today are Naperville, Illinois, with Phil Lawler. They 92.5% of their students pass the Fitnessgram test. They make it mandatory all the way through senior high school. And even when the football players participate in football, they still take PE. It's a fact. And he said the last 15 years they made that mandatory for the football players, all athletes, to take PE. They've won more championships the last 15 years than the previous 55 years. Because PE is not just running in place. PE is wellness, it's health, it's all orientation. That's extremely important. So again, there's a tremendous field here of endeavor. Another question?
Well, Dr. Cooper, I'm from the same state. And, in Texas, we have no class, no play. It's competitive all the way. And when you're in high school, if you cannot, compete, and especially girls, I feel so bad. I mean, I grew up in the years when girls were barely getting into exercise, and your figures of only 10% of the girls in 12th grade are physically fit. I wonder how much in our schools, and I hate to speak this, Friday night football, Friday night lights, how can we live without it? But how much of that does impact that team appearance? And, I failed, I can't play because I can't pass the scores. And, it seems like we have a conundrum in Texas because, hey, you can't pass your grades, you can't play.
No pass, no play. That was Ross Perot's bill. Oh, he's my patient, too. So I'm working on the fitness aspect.
For brains to go, we at least need to do something. But it's so competitive within those school districts. And, you're not first, you sit on the bench.
But I do think that with our statewide testing, showing the figures that we have, we're going to go a giant steps forward in trying to resolve that. But you're right. It has to be a combination of things. Any more questions over here?
I'm just curious, what do you do with populations adolescents, young adults, how do you deal with mental illnesses? People that are depressed have other issues of mental illness. They need to change their lifestyle because they're obese or unfit, whatever. What do you use as a catalyst to get them moving? Do you first treat the depression by doing exercise, or do you start them on psychotropics so they can feel better about themselves and initiate them for a lifestyle?
One thing we're doing a lot of research with is supplementation. And one thing that's been used for treating ADD, ADHD, depression, has been omega-3. High doses of fish oil, omega-3, the D3. And again, it's our 6% EPA DHA, rather. So we're looking at that. But as far as what comes first, medication to treat the depression, and then exercise, I would try exercise first. If that didn't work, it depends on the magnitude of the depression. But remember, too, that omega-3 is brain food. If you can add exercise and omega-3, you might be surprised to see what happens to that combination. Another question? Here.
I'd be curious to know what your own exercise regimen is.
Well, I started running in 1960. Interesting story, read my books, you probably know this. Athlete, high school and college, state championship, won the mile in Oklahoma, the mile. Made All-State in basketball. Went to medical school, got too busy. Remember, too, obesity is the most common manifestation of stress. You're going to see an explosion of obesity now with the economy. Mark my words. So I gained from 168 to 204 during an 8-year period. Hadn't done anything about 8 years. At 29 years of age, I went water skiing for the first time in 8 years. I used to ski slalom courses and jumps and all that. I sustained a supraventricular tachycardia while I was exercising, skiing. My heart rate went from roughly 140 to about 240. Thought I was having a heart attack. Got me over to the side, took me to the emergency room. By the time I got there, my heart rate came back to normal. It's characteristic of SBT. Came back. One thing wrong with you, Doc, is you're out of shape. High school athlete, college athlete, 8 years, went the standard American way. That shot me back to reality. Changed my profession. I was going to orthopedics or something like that. I lost that 40 pounds. I ran my first marathon a year later. I ran 38,000 miles in 44 years. I finally had to stop running December the 29th, 2004, when I broke my leg skiing, snow skiing up in Colorado. I didn't stop, though. Even during that period of time, I exercised on a square dirt on a bicycle. I'd rest my broken leg in between. I exercised the two arms and the other leg. Didn't lose any fitness. Didn't gain any weight. After 9 weeks, I got back into a program. I don't run now. I work out 5-6 days a week, though. One thing I've learned, too, in my advanced age is you can't just rely upon aerobic conditioning. I used to think exercise is a panacea, particularly aerobics. You run 5 miles in 40 minutes, you can forget about your cigarette smoking and your weight and diet and all that. It's not true. Exercise is only part of a total wellness program. And so what I had to do is I had to bring in some conditioning of the muscles other than what I was running with. Otherwise, at 55 years of age, 22 years ago, I couldn't snow ski longer than 2 hours without my quads burning so bad I had to stop and rest. I can run 5 miles in 40 minutes. I learned a very important word, specificity. Specificity of training. So now I have recommendations in my book. It's age adjusted. In your 30s, you should be 80% aerobic and 20% musculoskeletal. In your youth, you don't need that. In your 40s, it's 70 and 30s. In your 50s, it's 60 and 40. 55 and 60 above, it should be 55-45. Need to have a balance there of the two. Otherwise, you won't be totally fit, and you won't try to pick up a sack of groceries and pull your back out. So I combine both. I probably spend about half my time on the weights, a circuit weight training program, and I try to walk briskly, 2 miles, 2.5 miles, at about a 13 to 14 minute pace. Now keep in mind too, if you can walk a mile in 12 minutes, that's the same energy expenditure as running a mile in 9 minutes, because you really have to work to do that. And you have 1/10 the injury problems if you limit to walking. Even if I walk a mile in 13 minutes, that's roughly a 10 minute equivalent. Now if you break 15 minutes, you get aerobic benefit. If you go longer than 15 minutes, you get health and longevity benefit between 15 and 20 minutes. But again, you must adjust your program to what you can do. And one of the most important things I tell my patients to do is listen to your body. You start breaking down, change, adjust, do something else. But don't quit. Fitness is a journey, not a destination. You must keep it up the rest of your life. That's what my hope is for all of you. Thank you. Is there any testing of fitness with the guidelines? I know it's just...
Well, I think that part of it would probably be what the President's Council is known for. I mean, we're mainly trying to get people to know what the guidelines are and how to actually energize their community.
Well, see, that's why the big success of the Robics program over the years has been that 12-minute test. The 12-minute test is huge, still used internationally.
So we have to use that as
well. As I said, the best way to get a person to stabilize to also evaluate, find what their cholesterol level is, their blood pressure level is, what their weight is, what their level of
health
is. That's the best thing to shock someone else. That's why we're being upset and creating an impression of America. We got a problem. That's the only thing I've ever told. There's one thing that probably happened to me. It was Bill Haskell's family. But I wanted to ask two things. One, do you have any type of a mandatory test or required test or suggested test to determine your level of aerobic fitness? That's number one. And number two, what do you have as far as safety is concerned? I mean, you have these guidelines, 18 to 64.
Right.
Right? A lot of people 40 years of age who shouldn't be out there going into
these. Yeah, and building up slowly. It's one of the chapters on safety and building up slowly.
See, that would be a common book. In the first book, all my books, I have the progressive system.
Larry,
you start walking.
Right.
If you start having any difficulty at all, you check your position because who has the chest system.
Right. Right.
Just like I argued with Jane Fonda years ago, she came out with the Roby dance. Well, she didn't do aerobics. I did aerobics 6 years before that,
right.
7 years before that. But she said exercise to the burn. Exercise to burn is dangerous. Exercise to burn could be angina.
Right, right.
You never want to do that.
You don't have
You've done too much.
We just want to get a picture for Nisha.
Yeah, it was Ken Mitchell, who's on the president's council, was not in my staff.
Right.
I was on the president's council back in the
schools.
And that was my own sports
myself.
I was a different mind, too.
Right.
Now, why hasn't Arnold done something in California?
Well, that's
my question on all of those.
I can't get through to
him. Dr. Cooper, we're going to have the Texas Public Health Association meeting in Austin this year in April, and I was just wondering if you're, could I contact you to see if you're...
Yeah, I'll contact my secretary.
I'll contact your secretary.
Dr.
Okay,
Cooper,
thanks.
We need to take a picture. Thank you.
We go so fast. I stay with my 45.
You did. Cynthia told me you would.
This is about an hour and 15 minute presentation. I did 45 minutes. I said, you've got to keep it at 45 minutes. Okay.
Oh, okay, we'll get a picture right here. www.fireandjustice.org. Dr. Cooper, could you add your admin I write for the name television or newspaper.
Thank you.